debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I wanted to talk to you about the dictator's handbook, as it were, how dictators try to disrupt societies. And there's a clip that's been floating around the internet forever. It goes back to an interview show years ago, and I was trying to find the original clip of it, and it's living over on YouTube, and it's a fairly long piece. A shorter version of it is on Twitter. In fact, I retweeted it. And it's a former KGB officer, a former Russian intelligence officer, explaining how to disrupt a democratic society, a democracy.
This is. We spoke several times before about ideological subversion. That is a phrase that I'm afraid some Americans don't fully understand.
There's nothing to do with espionage. Only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process, which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid of society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society. The next stage is destabilization. This time, subverter does not care about your ideas and the patterns of your consumption. Whether you eat junk food and get fat and flabby, it doesn't matter anymore. This time, and it takes only from 2 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, what matters is essentials: economy, foreign relations, defense systems. The next stage, of course, is crisis. It may take only up to 6 weeks to bring a country to the verge of crisis. You can see it in Central America now. And after crisis, with a violent change of power, structure, and economy, you have so-called the period of normalization. It may last indefinitely.
And normalization, of course, is flipping the country from democracy to autocracy. Tucker Carlson went on a rant on Fox News. And tell me if I'm misunderstanding this, maybe I'm confused here. But it seems to me like what he said last night is exactly what this guy is talking about. Create an alternative reality, push people into it in a way that ends their trust in their own government and in their own country, basically turns them into Russian agents or something like that, the agents of autocracy. It's not just Russia that does this to us. This is what he said. He said he started out by going on this rant about how Democrats are, quote, decriminalizing serious crimes, end quote. We had a fellow who called into Mark Pocan yesterday and basically echoed the exact same thing. Tucker Carlson says, oh, yeah, the Biden administration is even including free crack pipes in their safe smoking kits. Right? This kind of stuff. And then he goes on to say that that's proof that the Democrats don't care about public health and that their rule is illegitimate. This is exactly what he said. He said, quote, he's speaking of Democrats, but they're not worried about the public health at all. What they're worried about is public resistance to their policies. Disarming the population ends that resistance. Now, think about that for a minute. We live in a democracy where you resist policies by voting out the bums, not by shooting the bums. But here is a television commentator saying that by taking away people's guns, you are ending their ability to resist political positions. You know, the assumption that underlies that is breathtaking. He continues. He says they're very concerned, speaking of Democrats, they're very concerned because they know they rule illegitimately, that the population will rise up. That probably, and now Tucker Carlson is talking right to his audience, that probably has not occurred to you. It's definitely occurred to them. This is the destruction of democracy and replacing it with violent autocracy. You've got, you know, Ron DeSantis creating his own private police force down in Florida. You got Republican politicians all across the country using guns in their Christmas cards and their TV ads. White racists and white supremacists killing people all across the country, committing the majority of murders over the last 20 years or so. And they're claiming that the Democrats are the ones trying to harm this country? Democrats are trying to put America back together after 40 years of destruction by Reaganomics and all this bizarre ideology. So Noam Chomsky, I think it was a couple months ago, was on Mehdi Hassan's show on MSNBC. Tip of the hat to, who was it on Twitter here, Liberty, who I'm going to follow right now, who just flagged me with this on Twitter. Thank you. On that show, Noam Chomsky pointed out, well, he just came right out and said it. He says the modern Republican Party is the most dangerous organization in human history. Now, what he was referring to specifically was their climate denialism, that they are willing to see the human race destroyed in order to continue profits for the fossil fuel industry, an industry that heavily funds the Republican Party. Over on Democratic Underground, there was a fascinating post. It's called "The Republican Party is the Greatest Threat We Have Ever Faced." Apparently originally posted by Mickey D23. I'm not sure where that would be. It was an at sign, whether it's Instagram or whether it's Twitter or whatever. But here's the list. The Republican Party voted to acquit a would-be dictator of responsibility for leading a violent insurrection and coup, an attempt to overthrow our government. They refuse to protect voting rights. They support and praise Putin as he tries to conquer and enslave a democratic country. They support and praise dictators around the world. They cut taxes on billionaires and corporations, then introduce plans to raise taxes on the poorest people in the country. Yes, Rick Scott just laid that out in the Senate. They ram through laws to stop women from deciding what to do with their own bodies. They ram through laws to silence teachers, rewrite history, ban books, and comfort racists. They ram through laws to stop kids who aren't heterosexual from getting help and education about their mental health. They work to repeal child labor laws. They are working to make it so that adults can marry children. Yes, that's happening in several states, actually, lowering the age of consent. They refuse to pass common sense gun laws to stop children from being slaughtered in school shootings. By the way, those are all red states. They refuse to pass common sense gun laws. They voted against creating a department to investigate and prevent acts of domestic terrorism. They voted against capping the price of insulin so diabetics wouldn't go bankrupt trying to buy it. They voted against the oil and gas price gouging bill. Yes, there was actually a piece of legislation passed the House of Representatives that would have lowered the price of gas, and every single Republican in the Senate voted to block it. They cheer when one of their own says that Democrats should be shot. They claim to follow God and Christ, but ignore every single one of Jesus' commands found in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 25. They are trying to recruit an army of lawyers to form relationships with police officers, departments, and judges to make it easier to overturn the next election if they lose. Serious stuff. Is the Republican Party the greatest threat or a great threat to democracy in the United States? I would say so. Cheese Bro. His name is actually Chesebro. It's C-H-E-S-E-B-R-O. But, you know, he has a nickname, Cheese Bro. This memo did not get anything close to, in my opinion, the attention it should have. This memo was released last week in the context of, you know, by the January 6th committee, in the context of their efforts to get John Eastman's documents. And so, you know, when they issue subpoenas, they say, here's why we're issuing this subpoena. And they quoted this memo by Chesebro in which he says, quote, in the absence of the vice president, the president pro tem acts as the president of the Senate and thus is the one with the sole power and responsibility to play that role in the joint session. That role being to, you know, to count the electoral votes. He then opens the two envelopes from Arizona and announces that he cannot and will not, at least as of that date, count any electoral votes from Arizona because there are two slates of votes. And it's clear that the Arizona courts did not give a fair and full opportunity for to review election irregularities in violation of the process. Now, this is mind-boggling because what he's saying is that the temporary president of the Senate, pro tem. The president of the Senate is the vice president. And in 2020, that was Mike Pence. If Mike Pence is not around to open the ballots, then that goes to the president pro tem, who is the longest serving member, which was Chuck Grassley. And the day before January 6th, Chuck Grassley tweeted that he expected to be opening the envelopes. In other words, he thought that Mike Pence was not going to be able to open the envelopes. And sure enough, when Donald Trump tweeted, Mike Pence isn't doing what we wanted, they stormed the Capitol and tried to hang Mike Pence. And when they couldn't hang him, the Secret Service, apparently under Trump's direction, tried to whisk him away. Pence refused. Was Chuck Grassley in on the plot? It's starting to look like it, the senior senator from Iowa. What the hell is going on here? I think we're going to find out an awful lot starting next week as these hearings begin in Congress, these January 6th hearings. I'm looking forward to it. On the line with us, our old buddy Greg Palast, the world-famous investigative journalist, the author of How Trump Stole 2020 and previously The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. GregPalast.com is his website. On Twitter, at Greg_Palast, just like I'm Tom_Hartman. Greg, I understand you're down in Georgia, and you wanted to tell us about Major Turner. What's going on down there?
Yeah, the scene of the crime. Two things about Major Turner. He's the guy who came up with the, let me get the right name, the AT-4CS weapon. It's that 15-pound anti-tank weapon, which he conceived, which is now going into Ukraine. It's the last best hope to end those monstrous Putin panzer columns.
Wow.
I want to salute Major Turner. I also want to salute him because he's a warrior on two fronts. He's an African-American officer. In fact, he just retired after a career. He still has two kids in the career military. He was brought back as a consultant now that we have Ukraine to save Ukraine. He's key in that operation through a consultancy. He's also, while he was, because of Ukraine, he was sent to Fort Hueneme in California by the commander-in-chief. And the Republican chairman of his county in Columbus, Georgia, challenged his ballot so it wouldn't count.
Huh.
I've met with the major, and he's a real warrior. In World War II, black soldiers called this the war on two fronts. the war against the Nazis in Europe and the war against the Jim Crow Nazis in America, the fight for the vote. Yeah. And it took a long time to win that battle and now win that war. But now the battles are reversing. So he has actually has flown here to join us in Georgia for our continuing investigation of the challenges to African-Americans, young people, and Asian-Americans in particular, mounted by the Republican Party and organized by that organization, True the Vote, the very same people that came up with that cockamamie 2,000 mules.
Yeah, movie, yeah, which is now in theaters all over the country, bizarrely.
And very influential, very. There's signs, people lined up along roadsides with signs that say 2,000 mules. Well, supposedly, this major, he's my age, he's pushing 70, frankly, and they've taken away his vote.
Yeah. So it sounds like, I remember your reporting in the 2016 election and in the 2020 election, if I'm remembering correctly, about people in Georgia who had, whose ballots were purged. Was it 2020 or was it 2018 that Stacey Abrams was running against Brian Kemp?
It started in 14 for Al Jazeera. 16, I came back to Georgia for Rolling Stone. 18, and then 20 with the ACLU.
Right.
And I have to tell you, it's just every 2 years they have a new gimmick. This is a new one. But what makes this horrible, it's vigilante challenges. It's not the state. It's not the state of Georgia.
So this is not Raffensperger.
No, it's not. Believe it or not, this is. But it was encouraged by Raffensperger. But under the new law, SB 202, promoted by Raffensperger, but promoted by Brian Kemp, who's right. The vote suppressor in chief, any organization any voter in Georgia can challenge an unlimited number of other voters. So the party chairman of the GOP in Muskogee County challenged 4,000 people.
And are they automatically bumped off the rolls until they, where's the burden of proof?
On the voter. And imagine, So the major's in California. I have to say, he flew all the way back to Georgia at his own cost and time.
To defend his vote.
We still have 4,000 other Georgians who have to prove that they are who they are. Unfortunately, the way these challenges work, usually get your ballot. The only reason he knew that he was challenged is that the county made a mistake and didn't send him his ballot. Here's the awful thing. You get your ballot, you mail it in, but it doesn't get counted. You have to know that you're supposed to go into the county offices and prove you are who you are.
So, Greg, why is the Democratic Party not challenging Republican voters? If this is legal, why not do it?
I'm not sure. I think the Democratic Party, frankly, this time they do the right thing. People like lawyers like Mark Elias of the Democratic Party are saying this is against the law. I just met with the new president of the NAACP, top voting rights attorney, Gerald Griggs. Said, this is a violation of the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. And I agree. I don't think we want to get in a illegal vote suppression competition. Right. I think that's a wrong way to go.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's tempting, but I will say this. It's better to expose it and stop it. We stop cross-check. You had a lot to do with getting that information out when we stopped the cross-check game in Georgia. Yeah. When we stopped, we're stopping use it or lose it. We've reversed so-called mover. Every 2 years there's something new. It's whack-a-mole.
It's a new gimmick to remove Democrats from the voting rolls. So we have one Republican official in one county who challenged the votes of 4,000 people. Was that based on where they lived? Was that based on what they're? Where did he come up with 4,000 names? Number one, and number two, is this widespread across the state? I'm assuming it probably is.
Oh, it's really bad across the state. So 4,000 in Muskogee County. This guy, we know, got his list from True the Vote. And they simply used, what they did was, they know which zip codes and which people are which race and which way they vote, of course, because they're registered. But the other is that, so they took the people they don't like, and they looked up who put it out change of address forms. Now, you have a change of address form like the major because you're in the military and you need your absentee ballot because you're assigned to a military base. We had another woman who, because of COVID, moved temporarily to Florida for a couple months with her relatives, then moved back. I had a newlywed who switched homes within his county. You don't lose your vote for that with his new bride. It goes on and on. We called, just so you know, this is not one odd case. We called 800 people. We couldn't find one illegal voter that they named. And we did also encounter the GOP's official, Pam Reardon, who's the champ. She personally challenged 32,000 people.
Whoa. In Georgia.
Yeah. In Georgia. Altogether, about 300,000 people are facing non-count of their ballot. This is what's evil. They get a ballot. They're allowed to vote, but then it doesn't get counted. They have to know that it's been challenged. They have to go in and prove they are who they are, and especially for absentee voters. Well, for anyone to take off a day of work.
And this is all the result of that new voter suppression law that Brian Kemp pushed through last year.
Yeah, you know, and flying to Georgia to save your vote, that's kind of a heavy poll tax, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. Greg Pallas, I'm assuming Stacey Abrams and Fair Fight is all over this?
They will be. They pick up my information very quick.
Okay, good. Greg, you're the best. You do such great work. GregPallas.com, the website, Greg_Pallas on Twitter. Greg, thanks a lot for dropping by today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs. A gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Two amazing stories here. The first, 4 in 10 Republicans say, you know, the cost of freedom in America is our children. Honest to God, I'm not making this up. This is a brand new poll that just came out. I believe it just came out this morning. It might have come out on Friday, but it was the polling was done June 1st through June 3rd, and today is the 6th. So I'm pretty sure that this just came out today. And 44% of Republicans. Here's the actual numbers. Let me share with you the actual question that they asked. The question was, do you feel that mass shootings are unfortunately something we have to accept as part of a free society or something we can prevent and stop if we really try? That was the question. 44% of Republicans said mass shootings are inevitable as part of a free society. Meanwhile, 85% of Democrats and 73% of independents said mass shootings are preventable if we really try. How do these folks even believe that? I mean, this is just amazing. They also, respondents from both parties, right across the political divide, said that the other question was, will Congress pass any laws in the next few months that will make significant changes to gun policy? 66% of Democrats said no, 72% of independents said no, 71% of Republicans said no. Even though the majority of Americans want something done. Including Republicans. But 44% of Republicans said, yeah, the price of freedom is mass shootings. How do they even think that way? What do you say to your Republican friends when they say, yeah, mass shootings are terrible, but hey, it's the price of freedom. End of conversation. What do you say? I'm scratching my head on this one. Okay, last story for the first hour here. Trump is the first seditious president in our history. Woodward and Bernstein authored this piece in the Washington Post. I mentioned it on Friday. I talked briefly about it. They've been doing the circuits now, on television and whatnot. Most recently this morning or over the weekend, they were on a couple of programs and pointed out that Nixon was a criminal president. Nixon was paranoid. Nixon had his enemies list. You know, the same guys who did Watergate, who did the Watergate break-in and the break-in of Daniel Ellsberg's office, also put together the enemies list for Richard Nixon. And they had, a couple of hundred people on this list, and they sent them to the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service and said, audit these people. They sent them to the head of the FBI and said, track or harass these people, see if you can catch them doing anything wrong so that we can bust them or publicly humiliate them. I mean, this is just evil stuff. But it wasn't about overturning our republic. It was just Nixon being a criminal. Trump, on the other hand, took this country way down the road toward no longer being America, causing people to lose faith in our media, in reality-based news, so that now, the major source of news for Americans in the United States now is Facebook, and the right-wing sites are just run amok on Facebook, and of course the algorithm pushes them like crazy. And hey, one of the richest guys in the world owns Facebook. Why wouldn't he want that? When you get Republicans in office, your taxes go down and you're less likely to get regulated. So, hey, surprise, surprise. But anyhow, Woodward and Bernstein are saying that Trump was actually the first president to commit sedition, to actually try to overthrow our government, to overturn an election, and to turn America from a democratic republic into a strongman oligarchy. My words, not theirs, but they basically said Trump tried to create, quote, a permanent despotism, the ruins of public liberty, and riot and insurrection. Oh, this is what George Washington warned us about, those three things, excuse me. But Trump tried to create those three things as well. So what do you think? Did he pull it off?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
How long-term, how permanent is the damage to America that the Trump presidency did? I'm very concerned about this. How about you? Two ads in a week have been pulled from the Republican senatorial campaign. Rick Scott's organization, the Republican group to elect or reelect senators, as the case may be, first ad claimed that gas prices under Senator Maggie Hassan, the Democrat from New Hampshire, went up 23% when she was governor. Turns out that was a flat-out lie. Gas prices actually went down while she was governor. And the second ad, and these are being pulled by local television stations because they're filled with lies. And a lot of these local television stations, like owned by relatively conservative people. The second ad went after North Carolina Sherry Beasley and accused her of setting free a child porn offender when she was the Chief Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court. Again, five TV stations in Raleigh and Charlotte said that they would pull the ad or that they had paused it. Amazing stuff. I mean, it's a big story about it over at Raw Story. Malcolm in Bluebell, Pennsylvania. Malcolm, what's on your mind today?
To answer your question on the Republican Party and the greatest threat, I feel like they wouldn't be, it's the enablers like Joe Manchin and Sinema that have allowed them to continue with their agenda.
I respectfully disagree. Even if Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema were voting with the Democrats, we would have gotten more done. But there's an awful lot that can't be done by reconciliation. In order to do something through reconciliation, the entire piece of legislation has to have a tax consequence. It has to impact the budget and taxes, and it cannot raise the deficit. And that means that entire huge chunks of legislation, like gun control, for example, cannot be passed by reconciliation. Manchin and Sinema have no say in it. Basically, it's got to be done. You've got to have 10 Republicans. The problem here, Malcolm, is the failure to get 10 Republicans. It's not Manchin and Sinema.
So will we need Manchin and Sinema to build back better and voting rights?
Yes, on those two things we do.
Exactly.
but we need that, them because of the Republicans.
So as long as we have them, we don't necessarily have a 50-50 split, because as Mitch McConnell said, he prays for them two every night. And I think...
Oh, I'm with you. I'm no fan of these two. You know, and I'll acknowledge the problems that they're creating for the Biden administration and for America. But any attempt to blame Democrats in general, or even Manchin and Sinema specifically, or to try to say, no, Congress is dysfunctional, I'm going to push back on and say, no, it's not Congress and it's not Manchin and Sinema. It's 50 Republicans in the United States Senate who are committed to doing anything they can to damage this country in the hopes that it will hurt us so badly that people will say, well, the Democrats didn't work, let's try the Republicans. You know that, Malcolm.
All right. Okay. I'll give you that, but I would just salute them too if we could get Build Back Better on the books in the history books. That's the only thing with
them. I'm still pissed off about that too. I'm with you.
What I was calling for was, I'm a truck driver, and yesterday I put $600 in my gas tank at one time, and that didn't even fill up my gas tank. And so what I'm afraid of is that I know that a lot of politicians, it was a story on Raw Story maybe on Monday with official Rand Paul, and it talked about insider trading and how a lot of it is still legal within politics, basically. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that, I mean, it's safe to say that those same 50 Republicans are in the pockets of the fossil fuel industry. The ironic part is that during COVID, we were arresting people for hoarding and essentially price gouging masks and hand sanitizer. But every single week we hear about the record profits from the fossil fuel industry, and all we're really giving it is lip service. And so what I see, I think at one point when Elon Musk decides to give Trump back his Twitter account in all caps, Trump would tweet, what a job Biden has done with gas, and only he can fix it. And I think with the connections that he has and Prince George Kushner with the Saudis, that they may be right, and that could possibly lead to people supporting him in 2024.
Absolutely, Malcolm. I agree with you, and I you know, that's going to be the bloody flag that they're, or the bloody shirt that they're waving. I am with you, and the whole gas price thing, the Republicans are loving this. Then they're asking their friends, the Saudis, you know, keep working with the Russians, try to destroy the American economy. That will help us politically. And I think that's the most bizarre, awful, craven thing that is imaginable. But that's what they're up to. Malcolm, thank you for the call. John in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
There already are infringements on the Second Amendment rights. And they, I can text this even. You know, if you're 18 or 19, you cannot own a handgun, cannot buy a handgun.
Right.
That's an infringement on the Second Amendment right. When you go hunting, you can only take, I think it's like 4 or 5 rounds in your magazine to
it's
go hunting?
Three if you're duck hunting. It's 5 in a lot of states if you're, you know, hunting other things. In Canada, it's 5 nationwide. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, my point is there already are an established infringements on the Second Amendment right, and they just deal with the boundaries.
In the 1930s, we passed laws to end, you know, to ban fully automatic weapons. It took 20 years to get most of them back out of circulation, maybe 30 years. But, you know, we eventually did so. But that's, you know, those are weapons that arguably are covered by the Second Amendment, if you want to be a Second Amendment absolutist. What's your point?
My point is that should be our strategy going forward. Push the boundaries. Boundaries of lowering the bullets, raising the age that you can own a gun. The boundaries already exist, and they're constitutional.
Yeah, even the Heller decision.
It's not constitutional.
Yeah, even Scalia's Heller decision, which discovered this mystical individual right to own a gun in the Second Amendment, even that decision explicitly says that Congress has the power to regulate guns. I mean, it just comes right out and says it. So I think your point is well taken, John. You know, very well taken.
One more point. It doesn't really matter what the Constitution says. It just matters how 5 people interpret it.
You're right. And that's why the GOP has worked so hard to make sure that they know who those 5 people are. John, thank you very much for the call. Brian in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Brian, thanks for listening to KTRC. What's up?
Good morning, Tom. You know, I'm for openness and accuracy in all of our political discussions. And you started the show talking about the economy over the last 50 years. You know, Bill Clinton, that Democrat, he had a big role in all that deregulation you brought up.
I agree.
He was the president that signed Glass-Steagall.
Signed the end of
WTO.
Yeah. And the WTO.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And you kind of soft pedal it and make it sound like the Republicans held a gun to his head and made him do it.
Okay, well, let me fix that then, Brian, right now. Let me just say, for the record, in my article, in my op-ed over at Hartman Report, I say we are still living in Reagan's neoliberal era. And Democrats have bought into it, you know, both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama bought into it. And actually, Jimmy Carter, in the last year of his presidency, bought into neoliberalism just as much as all the Republicans have. But the fact of the matter is that the Republican Party is still 100% there, and the Democratic Party is only maybe 40% there nowadays.
I consider myself a centrist, and I think if we got to remind ourselves, elections are won in the center, and I think both of our parties are drifting to their extremes, which I think is a bad thing. And, you know, Bill Clinton was a disaster as president for the Democratic Party.
In
I just
some
have
ways.
To say that.
In some
I'm
ways.
A union man. I knew what he was doing. I was for Dick Gephardt. I couldn't understand why we were electing the governor of Arkansas to be president.
Yeah.
And I think he needs to be the cautionary tale going forward and look at what young, charismatic presidents bring you, because a lot of it was really bad. And Bill could have behaved himself like Barack Obama did. You know, we might... Al Gore would have been president.
Yep.
We might not have had 9/11. We
yep.
probably wouldn't have had the Iraq War.
Yeah, absolutely.
We probably wouldn't have had George W. Bush in the White House.
Yep.
So we need to really think hard about who Democrats put in the White House. And both parties have some huge problems.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Brian. No disagreement on any of that. Tom in Fairfax, California. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Say, I was just reading a Washington Post article about the shooting in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned that the fellow bought an AR-15 at 3 p.m. and did the shooting at 5 p.m. the same day.
Wow, I missed that. What I did catch was that he was a pain patient, and he murdered the surgeon who would not give him the pain drugs he wanted.
That's right, right. But, I mean... What struck me, it reminded me of what Beto O'Rourke said when he was outside after he had confronted Abbott inside and got shouted down. But outside, he said, what did they think was going to happen when they sold them these guns, when they sold that kid that gun?
Right.
It's exactly what happened. And my feeling is, why aren't they going to go to the place where they bought it? Take the cameras, the TV interviewers, and say, okay, how does it make you feel that you sold this gun and 2 hours later, four people are dead? And to start putting a bit more pressure on the retailers.
I think that's a great idea. My guess is that the reporters for the networks are afraid to walk into a gun shop and ask questions like that.
Yeah. Oh, I don't. Yeah, they got cameras. They got coverage.
Yeah.
I just think the people that are selling these things must be haunted. I just can't imagine how they would feel.
Perhaps
one. Go ahead.
No, I just, that's it. Perhaps I don't know.
I should hope so. And like that fellow who's with the gun industry who said he couldn't take it anymore and he quit.
Yeah, yesterday.
Had him on a couple days ago.
Yeah, that was a moving moment.
I got to
move along. Thanks a lot for the call. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud, with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. NetSuite.com/Hartman. That's NetSuite.com/Hartman.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Brian in Duval, Washington, listening on KBCS. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to point out something. I think you've pointed this out a number of times in your show, that a lot of the shooters in mass shootings are actually right-wingers. And so going back to this woman, Amanda, that called, and all the Republicans who say that there's a mental health issue, I would implore you to do what you do best and take their logic and flip it back on them and say, okay, if most of these mass shooters are right-wingers and there's a mental health issue, what is it saying about the Republican Party and so many of their supporters?
Do you know of any studies, Brian, that actually say that most mass shooters are right-wingers? I've heard anecdotal things here and there, but I've never seen anything that actually, you know, definitely concludes that.
Yeah, I thought that you had said that at one time, and I know I read that somewhere, many mass shooters were actually right-wingers. Think about the guy that was the Las Vegas shooter. I guess he was supposedly a
His library, he had all books by all the Fox hosts, if I'm remembering correctly. I may be wrong on that, but that's my recollection.
The Sandy Hook shooter, she was pretty much a right-winger and a gun nut. Those are two examples that come off the top of my head. But, you know, I'm just saying, look, one of the reasons I love listening to your show, Tom, is that you are so good at taking that warped right-wing logic and flipping it back on them.
Well,
and if there are out there, I think it would be really good if you use your platform to flip their logic back.
Yeah, the shooter down in El Paso, who was looking to kill as many Hispanics as he could. That, you know, he was a right winger. He had bought into Tucker Carlson's white replacement theory. Yeah, Brian, let me do a little research on that one, and I'll get back to you. Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Roger in Winter, Wisconsin. Hey, Roger, thanks for watching us on Twitter Live. What's up?
I want the Democrats to be on the offensive. It's high time.
Me too.
It seems like they're always on the defensive and reacting.
Yeah.
I want them to be offending, because mass shootings are human sacrifice to the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
It's human sacrifice.
Yeah.
They don't care. As long as they can fondle and caress their AR-15, they really don't care how many people are murdered, how many children are murdered in their classrooms. I call them the repugnant party.
I'm not quite willing to say that they don't care, Roger. I think they wince and cringe every time this happens. The gun fetish and the "we need guns to overthrow the tyrannical government" BS. That's real. That's stuff that they believe. But I have a hard time believing that, you know, John Cornyn or Ted Cruz actually, you know, applaud when there's a mass shooting. I think it makes them cringe. I think it embarrasses them.
I'm not saying that they applaud it. I'm saying that they don't care, really. I mean, what was it, like 3 days after Uvalde, Ted Cruz is talking at the NRA convention?
Yeah, and Donald Trump is there dancing. But we know that Trump is a psychopath, you know. So Ted Cruz, probably. I get it, Roger. Yeah. I get it. I'm trying to be measured in my rhetoric, particularly after Amanda's calling me out as a hate monger. I'm like, what, really? So, Roger, thank you for the call. I got to run, but I appreciate it. It's 51 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in 60 seconds. I just have to I have to read an ad for Dynovite. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. A caller a few minutes ago said, you know, Amanda had called up and said, it's all mental illness, and you guys won't do anything about mental illness. And I failed to point out that Reagan was the one who closed the mental hospitals. But nonetheless, that was her argument. And so here we have, and so somebody called just a minute ago and said, you know, why don't you take that logic and flip it around? So this is David Leonhardt writing for The New York Times on May 17th of this year. The headline is "The Rights of Violence Problem." And he notes, over the past decade, the Anti-Defamation League has counted about 450 U.S. murders committed by political extremists. Of the 450 killings, right-wing extremists committed 75%, Islamic extremists committed about 20%, and left-wing extremists were responsible for 4%. Nearly half of those right wing, nearly half of all the murders, 75% right wingers, but 55% of all the murders were committed not just by anti-government types, which is 14%, or other right wing, which is 6%, but 55% of those murders were committed by people who openly embraced what they referred to as white supremacy. So, yes, it is white supremacists, a belief system that lives on in vigorously in the GOP, who are committing the majority of the murders in the United States. Just for the record, you can look it up in the New York Times, David Leonhardt's column. Andre in Chicago. Hey, Andre, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you feel today?
I'm feeling great, Andre. How about you?
I'm okay. Sorry, a belated happy Memorial Day to you and the family.
Thank you. Back at you. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Very quickly, I just wanted to say, first of all, that I think if the Women's Basketball Association had been doing regular drug testing, that Brittany Griner wouldn't be in the situation she's in. I'm wondering
That's assuming that actually was her pot, which may or may not be the case.
I see. Okay, I just want to say that briefly. Now, when it comes to these guns and this violence, you know, the Republicans should be called out for inciting a lot of this violence that's going on. I remember Donald Trump on many occasions, he said that if they didn't stand for the anthem, that you go out there and take that SOB off the field. Right. He told the police that when they put people in the car, they didn't have to be so gentle. It's okay if they bump their head. The Republicans spread a whole lot of hate, which leads to violence. Marjorie Taylor Greene on there with rifles. The people out there calling, saying, hang Mike Pence. And Republicans never denounced that. And not only that, they haven't denounced Putin for the violence that he has inflicted on people over there.
Donald Trump continues to support Putin in Ukraine.
Exactly.
I don't know why this is not mentioned every day in the media. You know, that Donald Trump continues to support Putin's war against Ukraine, along with 57 Republicans in the House of Representatives.
And all of them should be called out for what they're doing and associate this gun violence with the money that Putin has given to the NRA because they're all in bed together.
Yep.
And it definitely needs to be called out. Okay, Tom, man, have a good day, man. Take care of yourself.
Thanks a lot, Andre, good to hear from you. And in fact, you know, the NPR did a whole special on this. It's really easy to find with, you know, Google or DuckDuckGo. Just look at NPR guns. NRA and Russia, right? This was in 2016. They concluded, as a result of this study, that the NRA was basically a front group for Vladimir Putin. And here we are. Joan in Rochester, Minnesota. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was thinking about the politicians. And politicians are elected by the people to be listened to and for them to help make our country better. And instead, when we have politicians who have large corporations offering them large amounts of money every year, you know that they must be affected by that. And I think that the politicians only have to say one phrase, we do not take your money. No, we're not accepting monies that look like bribes and look like things that need to be done for anybody other than the people. It's a simple thing.
Yeah.
Say no.
Yeah, that's the Progressive Caucus in Congress. You've got about 100 members now of the House of Representatives and a couple of senators, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, you know, there might be a few others, who are saying that, who have essentially taken that pledge. It's a great trend. The problem is the law, you know, and the law was changed not by legislators, but by the Supreme Court. That's the big challenge that we're facing. But Joan, I think you're absolutely right. It's a major, major problem. Will in Broomfield, Colorado, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Will, what's up?
Getting back to the original point there about the 44% of Republicans who are
right
okay with the whole thing.
Yeah.
This is all part of their plan, and we've talked about this before. The Republicans, the powers that be, the big thinkers there, they are pushing what's commonly called Naomi Klein's shock doctrine. They want to drive society into this,
into chaos.
An electroshock.
Yeah.
Into chaos, exactly. And they'll be there saying the world is chaos. And just like John Galt in their Bible, Atlas Shrugged, they're going to come out, the elites are going to come out and save the rest of the world. But first, they have to completely make it collapse first. So they're cackling and rubbing their hands there. They like the idea of people being full of despair over the fact that our society is broken down. Our social contract is broken down.
Well, they see it as an opportunity. I mean, to the extent to which society breaks down, you blame government. And, you know, when Reagan declared war on government in 1980, saying, you know, the nine most dangerous things in the world are, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. And, you know, there are no good people in government. If they were, private industry would have hired them. Mm-hmm. And government is not the cure for your problems. It's the source of the problem. You know,
exactly.
He was declaring war on government on behalf of big ag, big chemical, big fuel, you know, big oil, big coal, and big Russia, billionaires big who don't want the taxes.
Big religion going all the way back to the 40s when they started getting Billy Graham talking about the Jesus the capitalist and all that stuff. This is going back decades. This is their big scheme.
I agree. And I think it's entirely strategic. I completely agree with you.
Exactly.
And that's why so many Republicans go along with Donald Trump, because he was an agent of chaos. You know, they think he's a buffoon. They know he's a sexual predator, a con man. They know all that stuff. It's not a secret.
Yeah.
But they go along with him.
We need to go out there. They want the chaos, and we need to fight the chaos.
I agree. And that's their whole stolen election thing, too. That's more chaos. It's like, make people not trust your government. That's their plan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Today's book in the Tom Hartman Book Club is We the People, A Call to Take Back America by me. And we're starting at page 5, first chapter. It's titled A Disturbing Scenario. The nation's leader knew that there were plans for a major act of terrorism against his country. Previous attempts had failed, but he knew that it was only a matter of time before they'd succeed. Finally, in a bold terrorist act, a major national symbol was destroyed. And the leader used the opportunity to declare a, quote, war on terrorism, end quote, and establish his legitimacy as a leader, even though he hadn't won a majority in the previous election. He referred to the heinous acts as a, quote, sign from God, end quote, and declared an all-out war on terrorism and its ideological sponsors. A people, he said, who traced their origins to the Middle East and found motivation for their evil deeds in their religion. Soon, the first prison was holding terrorism suspects. In a national outburst of patriotism, flags were displayed everywhere, even printed in newspapers. Within weeks of the terrorist attack, in the name of combating terrorism and fighting the philosophy that he said spawned it, the nation's now popular leader had pushed through legislation that suspended constitutional guarantees of free speech, of privacy, and the right to habeas corpus. Police could now intercept mail. They could wiretap phones. Suspected terrorists could be imprisoned without specific charges and without access to their lawyers. Police could sneak into people's homes without warrants if the cases involved terrorism. To get his Patriotic Act passed over the objections of concerned legislators and civil libertarians, he agreed to put a sunset or expiration provision in it. Within the first months after the terrorist attack, instead of referring to the nation by its usual name, he began to use the word homeland. As hoped, people's hearts swelled with pride, and the beginning of an us versus them mentality was sown. Within a year of the terrorist attack, the leader's advisors determined that the various local police and federal agencies around the nation were lacking the clear communication and overall coordinated administration necessary to deal with the terrorist threat facing their nation. He proposed a single new national agency to protect the security of the entire nation, consolidating the actions of dozens of previously independent police, border, and investigative agencies under a single powerful leader. And perhaps most important, he invited his supporters in industry into the halls of government to help build his new detention camps, his new military, and his new empire, which he said would ultimately herald peace. Industry and government worked hand in glove in a new type of pseudo-democracy sustained by war. That scenario is actually 70 years old. The time is 1933. The leader is Hitler. The Reichstag, Germany's parliament building, was gutted by a fire started by a Dutch arsonist or terrorist. Americans remember Hitler's office of Reich Security, the Reichssicherheitsamt. I'm saying that wrong, but anyway, simply by its most famous agencies, the Schutzstaffel's initials, the SS. And now you know the rest of the story. George Orwell noted in his novel 1984, a chilling portrait of government control that is becoming all too recognizable in America today. For instance, the way Orwell's seemingly democratic president kept his nation in a constant state of repression was by having a perpetual war. Cynics suggest the lesson wasn't lost on Lyndon Johnson or Richard Nixon, who both, they say, extended the Vietnam War so it coincidentally ran over election cycles. Knowing that a wartime president is more likely to be reelected and has more power than a president in peacetime. Thus, the founders and the framers disposed of despotism by church or state. Oh, I'm sorry. Orwell's idea that perpetuated war was a masterful technique for repressing the masses, and it wasn't new. On April 20th, 1795, James Madison, who shepherded through the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and would become president of the United States the following decade, wrote, quote, Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. End of quote. Reflecting on war's impact on the presidency, Madison continued his letter about the dangerous and intoxicating power of war. In war, too, he wrote, the discretionary power of the president is extended. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments, or profits, is multiplied. And all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced to the inequality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and morals engendered by both. No nation, Madison concluded, could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. And it goes on about how they tried to prevent that from happening. The book is We the People, A Call to Take Back America, an illustrated nonfiction by Tom Hartman. Dan in Mammoth Hot Springs, Wyoming. Hey, Dan, it says here you disagree with me. You go to the front of the line. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I love your show, Tom. Listen to you every day. But I disagree with you about Nixon being a common criminal.
Okay.
He's a 68 treasonous traitor when he was interfering with the peace talks when he wasn't even in office. And then he did rig the DNC election in 72. They didn't want to face Muskie.
You're right on both those points, Dan. And you know, for people who don't know what we're talking about, in 68, Nixon interfered in LBJ's peace talks with Vietnam and blew them up so that the war would continue, so Hubert Humphrey would lose and Nixon would win. And then in 72, he bumped out Ed Muskie, who would have beat him, according to the polls, and got him replaced by George McGovern with a Dirty Tricks campaign. But neither of those things, to my point, Dan, neither of those things brought down the Republic. Neither of those things caused people to not believe that the stories that they were reading in the news were actually true. Neither of those things caused people to think that the election itself at the ground level and the local precinct and state levels were rigged. Those are the things that cause people to lose confidence in a country. And that, in my opinion, is sedition. I think what Nixon did in 68 was treason, which is different from sedition. And I think what he did in 72 was just a federal crime. Have I convinced you?
It involved the election, and then Ford giving him the pardon actually puts Ford at the top of the list of being worst presidents ever, because then it normalized being a lying liar in chief.
Yeah.
Nixon didn't face the consequences, and that just normalized lying in politics.
Right. Well, I'm with you on that. So, Dan, I think our dispute here is more semantic than principled. But thank you for the call, Dan. From Dan to Dan, this is Dan in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Your first call, I wanted to say the automobile is just a ridiculous argument. There's horsepower to weight ratios that the government puts on, so you can't drive a Formula One car down the road.
Oh, good point. Good point.
I was going to say to the Republicans have to deal with mass shootings for freedom. I'd say I'd tell them that, well, you know what, our freedom machine is running low on power, so we're going to need your kids.
Yeah.
To power the machine. So, and right. See how they, you know, when it's their kids, when the shoe's on the other foot, you know, how do they deal with that?
The GOP powered by the blood of children. Yeah, I get it. It's a good meme. Dan, thank you very much for that. Ari in Eureka, California. Ari, you're on the air. What's up? Ari?
Yes.
Ari is not listening. Russ in Upland, California. Hey, Russ, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi. In regards to so much of the Republicans' problem with gun control, quote unquote, is racist. Hey, my son moved to Tennessee from Southern California. He was born and raised here.
Right.
And we were pretty moderate people, myself and my wife. We got radicalized, and now we're considered leftists by everybody. Okay, I just couldn't take it. But he moved there, married a gal, born and raised in West Tennessee, and her father's a dentist, you know, her uncle's an MD, her other uncle's an architect. These are educated people, okay? They are living in 1950.
Yeah. Are they all Trump humpers?
In terms of social issues. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
If you dare speak ill of Trump, that's like uttering
blasphemy.
Profanity yeah. at a Baptist church.
Yeah.
My son went from a guy who played baseball professionally, had teammates from high school on, you know, black kids, and he got to Tennessee, and all of a sudden, every other word comes out. He rails at the television because he sees a black family in a commercial.
Wow, you mean he got a contagious dose of racism?
He got a deadly dose of racism.
Oh, that's so sad, Russ. I am so sorry to hear that.
And we're going to visit him next month, and my wife are trying to figure out a way to keep our mouths shut just so
yeah.
we can see the new baby.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, family and love have to take priority over politics. I totally get it. Russ, I got to run, but thank you sure. for the call. I'm so sorry to hear that situation. But I suspect that this is a fairly common story now in America.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.